It's Wednesday, May 26, 2010, and you're listening to episode 192 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 3 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
We are in the last couple days of Reyna's Wings. They are accepting March of Dimes is accepting donations constantly. I mean, it's a great cause. But the contest we are running is going to end on May 31st. You have a couple days left. So if you want to make a donation, get out there, do it, and be sure to either include in the comments or in a private message to Necronomatron on our forums that you're Fear the Booter. We still have the prizes coming in from Drive Thru, Art Dream, and Polymancer. And I do want to pause to thank those three companies for their support of what's been a great run. I got some early numbers in from Necro, and they're not done yet, but even the early numbers are, we did a really good job raising some money for this cause.
Good.
And so here we are on the final push. Let's really make this a kick-ass thing. So if you have not gotten out there and made your donation yet, be sure to do that soon. If you haven't been to feartheboot.com in a while, you might want to go out there and check it out. I did a few minor tweaks to it. Nothing significant. You're not going to go out there and see a radically new site. But for example, one of the things we put up was a list of affiliated sites like Postcards from the Dungeon, our Cafe Press store. Also, we now have an affiliate program with Drive Thru and Amazon. So if you're a listener, Fear the Boot, and interested in supporting our show, and you're going to go buy something off Drive Thru Amazon anyway, if you do it through those links, we will get a small percentage of the sale. It will not cost you any more. You will pay the exact same price. We will just get a small kickback from the sale to help fund the hosting costs and all the other things that go into creating this show. But in addition to that, I've tried to make it a little bit easier to find all of our social networking stuff. So if you're interested in following us on Twitter or Facebook or whatnot, there are now much more prominent links to help you to do that. Which brings me to the fact that there's something that Chad, you and Wayne were doing for a while and have just done again and probably got a really successful one, which is...
I thought that was something in private.
No, it's the other thing with the video camera. No, no, the other
thing with the video camera.
Okay. Yeah, but yeah, we can talk about that one.
If anyone's interested in seeing sort of a little video blog, these two ride together to the podcast because they work together. And so Chad brings a video camera and they just film their sort of stream of consciousness of whatever it is that they're looking at or talking about or who they're cussing out on the road.
It's stuff that really does not fit on the show, but we want to talk about anyway. And we figure we have a half hour to kill and I got a new toy. We did one and everybody really seemed to like it. We were really happy with it. And then something happened and I didn't come the next week. And then we brought the camera out again. Then Wayne and I filmed this one and it just did not turn out well.
Yeah, there were a lot of... talking about it after it was over. It's like, I don't want anyone to watch that.
Yeah, it was kind of embarrassing. And we is a bad idea we thought would be a good idea, but it was really a bad idea. And then we kept pushing it because, oh, it's got to work. If we just push it further, we could... No.
Anytime you have to turn the camera off and then turn it back on to continue, chances are you should just stop there. And
yeah.
So it's kind of like Pirates of the Caribbean.
yeah. I like the first one. If before anyone asks if they can see that on the side, our mess up, I already deleted it. It was pretty bad.
Okay, but there's a good one that you're going to be releasing at some point this week. And among the social networking things that I've put up there, we do have a YouTube channel we're trying to use for these little video blogs, Fear the Con video, if we shoot some video at Gen Con, that type of stuff. It's all
if
there.
We shoot some video at Gen Con.
When we shoot some video at Gen Con this year. So if you want to follow that channel, that is also now linked in a couple places off of our site. So be sure just to get out there and click around a little bit and see what's out there.
And don't worry, you can watch this stuff at work because since Chad's filming it, there won't be any bikini-clad females involved, so feel free.
What are you saying, Pat?
That is true, but...
I listen to the show. I know what goes on here, or what doesn't.
That is true. No bikini-clad females, but if we happen to die on the way here, at least there'll be video evidence that it was Chad's fault.
Are you criticizing my driving now? Man...
I think they're just jealous, Chad, of you and I sitting out in the woods making gay palm while they're...
I know!
All right, so let's talk about...
Pat's just jealous that he threw dung at people and I live next to five hot girls.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I think I agree with him. I'm jealous of that as well.
Yeah.
So let's talk about something gaming related here. Board game meetups.
Yes.
You and Wayne have been involved in a local board game meetup.
And I'm missing mine today, by the way, so I could be here.
You'll survive. I'm pretty sure.
No, I survived.
Okay. Could you guys talk a little bit about what this meetup is, how you got involved in it?
So there's two levels to this.
Okay.
One is the highly technical level, the very boring level of there's a company and a website called meetup.com.
Right.
And they're a pay service. What you do is you go on there and you say, well, I'm looking for, in my geographic location, within so many miles of my home, somebody who's playing a weekly, monthly, daily, hourly, minutely, whatever, poker game. Or I'm looking for a group that is trying to get people together and we're going to go see a baseball game. And we're going to go see a baseball game together every week.
It doesn't have to just be games that you're playing or anything like that. It could be meeting up about anything.
It could be it's like, hey, swingers. I'm looking for swingers in my area. Where's this swinger group?
So this is the Craigslist of board games.
Well, you know, it honestly, as I was perusing it, it's not really that cheesy. I mean, it is basically like board games, poker games. Let's meet up and go to a bar for dancing. Not hookups, but just let's all go to clubs together in a big group.
It's about finding people to have
It's
generally not for a one-time thing. I mean, they provide a calendar of events. They provide a forum for a discussion area. They provide links and things like that.
Well, and even if you don't use meetup.com, doing a little bit of looking around on Google, I found there are two other places you can find things like this.
Hotdates.com does not count.
Which is, what about hotpants.com?
Hotpants.com always counts.
Doing a little searching on Google, I found there are two other good places you can go to get this kind of stuff. One is relevant community sites. The major sites for whatever the interest is. For example, with RPGs, I guess an RPG Net or something. But the second is just do a Google search on noun and place.
Yeah.
Board game, meetup, Dallas, or whatever, and hit search, and you will probably find groups, even if they're not on meetup.com, who are having weekly or monthly get-togethers at some gaming shop to play whatever it is that you're interested in.
So what Wayne and I do, and I've mentioned this on the show before, is there's a group. See, someone starts a group. That's the person who pays the fee. There's like a monthly fee to actually have a group. There isn't a fee to be a user of it. So somebody started a group called the St. Louis Board Game Meetup Group. And there's a local hobby shop in town called Game Night that actually pays the fees for this. They also give a discount if you go to their store on a meetup night and buy a board game.
The meetup nights aren't limited to just their store.
They do a coffee shop. They have stuff going.
It's such
all
a
month
big
long.
Group in such a big city that basically they have meetups multiple times every week because you can't have all the, you know, everyone from one area isn't going to drive all the way up north for the other area. So they kind of splits out.
So we have a really good local meetup community here. We have a very cool board game community here in St. Louis that has tons of meetups all over town. Tons of people are part of it, and there's always something going on all the week. Well, anyway, I discovered this because I was doing searches for Fear the Con and local groups that I can connect with that would maybe advertise with their group or have their group come out to Fear the Con to kind of drum up some more business.
Yeah,
more
and
people.
I discovered it because Chad was doing Google searches on
and I saw this group. It seemed really cool, and I kind of wanted to broaden my horizons a bit. I wanted to meet some new people, and I love board games. I wanted to get into the Euro-style board games, and I showed up at the first one, complete stranger, had no idea who anybody was. I got on their message board and says, hi, I'm Chad. I do this podcast and I'm showing up. And they're like, cool, glad to have you. And I showed up, had no idea who anyone was, and just started shaking hands. And they asked me, well, what kind of board games are you interested in? And I'm like, I'm like Arkham Horror. I want to play anything. Anything you guys put in front of me, I want to play. Because I want to be involved. I want to get into this. And I want to experience new games.
Yeah, and I tell them each time I go that I'm here to try new games. If I've played it before, that doesn't mean I'm not willing to play it now. But I'm always going to pick something I've never played before because that's what I'm getting out of this, is that opportunity to try new things.
There, and I actually met a couple of people who listened to the podcast before that I didn't know. It was just coincidence.
You know, it was kind of funny. I was asking someone there once about if they're going to Fear the Con 3, and they're like, no, I don't think so. But do you know the guy that runs it is actually here sometimes? It's like, yeah, I think I've met him a few times.
And actually, that's another point. Wayne and I don't go together.
No, we've out of all the times both of us have been, we've only been to the same one
you
once.
You go on Saturdays, Wayne, and Chad goes on Tuesdays.
I go on the last Tuesday of the month. Or I should say the fourth Tuesday. The fourth Tuesday of the month, because I got screwed and I thought it was the last Tuesday of the month in a month that had five Tuesdays.
So. The only one that we've gone to together is we both went to a Twilight Imperium one.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the special ones they do on Saturdays, and it was going to be an all-day thing, and we weren't even in the same group. We split up into separate groups.
Yeah, Wayne's game didn't even finish. We were there for, what, 6 hours?
We started at noon, and the thing ended at, what, 9? And our game didn't finish.
We've talked about where you can find these things, whether it's meetup.com, going on Google and searching for stuff in your area. Let's talk about some of the advantages people can get from participating in something like this. There are two things in there you guys mentioned that I really want to latch on to, which is, first of all, the ability to meet new people. This is a great way, if you already have a gaming group, just to meet some other folks that share your interests and enjoy their company. And if you do not have a gaming group, whether it's for board games, RPGs, or whatever you're trying to do, this may be a great way to just get out there, shake some hands, sit around a table, see what these people are like, and possibly scout out folks that you can hang out with maybe on a more regular basis outside of that meetup group. And because of the fact that it's a pseudo convention, there's no commitment here. This is not like you're locking yourself into anything. All you're agreeing to do is to sit down and play 2 hours of Puerto Rico. You're not agreeing to have somebody's baby. And so you really get a chance to know these people before forming a more solid group with them. And also get exposed to new games, new ideas, new gaming styles.
Oh, these people are into board games, too.
Yeah.
Their knowledge is encyclopedic.
Well, and that's one of the things I've enjoyed. For example, the guy who on our forums goes by Gamer Interface. He's a big board gamer, and we've only had one meetup with him. We're trying to schedule more. But he's really big into it, and he'll come out here with just this huge, I mean, this one of those duffel bags you could put a body in, and it's just full of board games, and he'll just bust it out.
You know, he's going to come one day, he's going to say, guys, I have body.
I have operation. It's kind of a LARP.
But yeah, after last time he came out, I went out the very next day and bought two of the games that we tried.
And that's the second thing I was going to lead into, is this is a great opportunity to try before you buy. And whether we're talking about board game meetups here, but keep in mind, you can find meetups for anything. You could just as easily find an RPG meetup where I'm sure you can find people doing pickup games. And this is a great way to do a try before you buy. Some RPG books are a little expensive. A whole lot of board games are really expensive. And so you may want a chance to try Descent before dropping 60 or 70 bucks or whatever it is that it costs.
The Twilight Imperium is a good example of that. It looked like a really interesting game, and it was interesting, and I had
fun
for it.
Cool game, but not a game I would want to own.
Yeah, I wouldn't spend that much money for the game after having played it.
None of my friends would want to play it. My gaming group would probably play it once just to try it, but I can never really see us playing it again. I mean, it's a very large, complex game. So yeah, I'm glad we tried it. Yeah, I get a lot of mileage out of this board game meetup group. I really like it. People there are super cool, too.
The last one I actually brought my wife to, so it was something we could go to together and hang out. And, of course, I ended up ditching her to another table because I wanted to play a specific game. But the moment I leave her alone, she runs a game of Pandemic, and they actually win.
Lies.
I don't believe it.
It's her fifth.
Fixer didn't happen.
It was her fifth game before she's ever won a game of Pandemic, but where else am I going to take her where she's going to gather a group of people and they're all going to start a board game?
You know what my favorite thing about Pandemic is? Pretending it's a zombie apocalypse and not actually a disease. Everything, all the different
blocks aren't diseases you're curing, they're like, populations you're killing.
The populations of turned zombies you're killing in your mind, or, well, like I do very loudly, declare what you're doing, like, because you have different roles, and there's all sorts of different roles. You don't play all the different roles in one sitting, but they all do different things. And exactly what they're doing to fight the zombie apocalypse, not cure a disease. Like, a scientist isn't curing the disease, isn't finding cures. They're taking apart the zombies that the other people are delivering to them. The operations director isn't like at the CDC. He's at the Pentagon and he's commanding troops and stuff. The containment specialist has a shotgun and an ambulance.
Pandemic Z, yeah.
Yeah. Pandemic can easily be converted to a zombie game.
All right. So let me ask you guys, from having gone to these meetups, what is the single best new game you guys have been introduced to that you had not played before this meetup?
I went to a convention called Geekway to the West that doesn't really necessarily have anything to do with the board game meetup group, but the board game meetup group is heavily involved in Geekway to the West sort of flow. And I wouldn't have even gone if I hadn't been part of that group. And there I met some awesome people, two really, really cool guys. In fact, we went and got sushi with them, and I discovered two games that I enjoyed immensely. One of them is a two-player game called Twilight
Pickle.
Well, Twilight Struggle, and it's a Cold War game. It's very, very neat. I mean, I could go on and why it's cool and what it is, but you can read the Wikipedia article. It's very in-depth, very awesome game. And I won. And then there was another one called Republic of Rome. It has a lot of layers to it. It has a lot of complexity to it. It has a lot of thought, and it's a board game that recreates the Roman Empire, and you play senators. And there's even a round where the senators, the players, debate law and try to get things passed, and they do votes on it, and they do different things to sway power, and there's deal making and backstabbing, and you can even do things like you can pass laws that have absolutely nothing to do with the game. Like, you could try to use your influence to have for the rest of the game a law passed that you could never call Pat by his name. You have to call him Mr. Poppycock. And then if everybody votes that way for the rest of the game, it's law. You have to call him Mr. Poppycock.
I'd vote on that.
I would too. I like that law.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it would probably be Agricola, which if that's not how it's pronounced, that's how they were pronouncing it there. I've heard it pronounced two different ways.
Yeah, Agricola or Agricola, which yep. Whatever your poison
hey,
is.
Wayne, we're Americans. We have the nukes. We pronounce it however we want.
That is true. But more than that, what I discovered wasn't necessarily an individual game. I discovered a genre that I enjoy. I enjoy the worker placement genre. The first week I went was one of their themed days, where like on Saturdays they sometimes do a theme. The first one was worker placement. But I've played quite a few other worker placements since then, and I just find that that's a genre that I really enjoy. And I would have never known that if I hadn't sat down and played about four or five of these and found I enjoyed every single one of them.
You know, we played a work replacement game with Dave on Sunday, and he said he didn't care for it. Guess who won?
Yeah, Puerto Rico.
Yeah, Dave won, of course.
Which Puerto Rico, actually, when I mentioned one of the games I bought immediately after the meetup with Gamer Interface, Puerto Rico was one of the two.
I got my ass kicked both times I played that game for one simple reason, which is I lack a strategy. Mm-hmm. When I sit down at a game of Catan, I know enough about the game that usually look at the board, wherever I end up in the placement order, whatever land I end up on, I can typically devise some kind of strategy. I'm going to win through trade. I'm going to win through, I have access mm-hmm. to all the resources I need, and I've got, you know, whatever. I can come up with something. My problem with Puerto Rico is I go into that game, I don't know enough about the buildings, mostly because I just haven't bothered to skim read all of them, that I have no strategy. And so I always get my ass kicked in that.
I'm going to give you a good one to start with. This is a good basic starting strategy. Don't play it with Dave.
It actually was a really close game. And Chad and I, first time both of us played the game, we won it. And now the second time we came in pretty close. I mean,
yeah, no, Dave played a very good strategy. He played a very tight game. And I honestly think I could have taken him. I know exactly what I did wrong within the game. And I think that I have a shot at taking him.
Yeah, I have the same thing. I think I had a chance, and I made a few mistakes. Yeah.
It wasn't Dave overpowering me. It was my game to lose. So
for several months, we were playing a game of one of our homebrews, which is hardly a shock because that's actually what we mostly play. I mean, despite all the jokes on the show about us playing nothing but old games, we actually, in truth, play almost nothing but homebrews.
Yeah, and I mentioned a few times that up until this point, every campaign I've been in with you guys has always been a homebrew.
Right.
I've never played a published system.
And it got...
We're playing a published system now.
It got killed by one of the top two things, I think, that kills all the campaigns we play in.
Not playing?
Yes, exactly. It's a long break. There are two things I have seen, at least in our game group, and I'm sure every gaming group is different, but there are two things that seem to kill games for us more than anything else. And the first one, and I think this has to do to some degree with the level of ambition we have when we go into the game, we want a certain level of depth and experience and immersion and such. And when you take too long of a break, it's a game killer. We can take a week off, no problem. 2 weeks, it's dangerous. More than 2 weeks, it will take a miracle of God and Congress to save this game. And we were off the horse for almost 2 months with this game. And by the time we came back...
And it was vacations.
Fear the con,
vacations, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
The way I described it was like somebody took and stabbed the game with a sword and it's bleeding out. But then we came back with energy. We were determined. We're going to save this game. And we had, was it 2 or 3 weeks in a row that we actually played again? And it's limping along and we think we've almost got it back. And then suddenly vacations come up and other things come up. And it's like tiny little stab wounds to the already bleeding game. And
I think our other leading cause is the other shiny.
Heroin?
No, no. I just mean that we're very lecherous with our games, that we'll be with one game, but looking at another. And...
Oh, yeah. I don't think that's what killed this game.
No.
But I've seen it kill.
Yes. I've seen it kill a lot of games.
Lots of games.
A game hits a slow point, or somebody mentions something else, and it sounds kind of cool on concept. And in truth, that campaign may flop and suck and whatever, but it just sounds cool. And so it is what happened here, but we end up jumping ship. But
I've actually seen a lot of games where the game is going great. Everybody's having a good time. And then a couple of players start talking about a different game. Not even, hey, let's play this other one. It's more like, hey, have you seen this Splat book came out. Hey, when was the last time we played this? Remember this other campaign that was really good in this other universe? Yeah. And then being social people, other people start talking about it and it starts going and it starts building. And all of a sudden, where everyone was talking about our current game, they're not talking about our current game anymore. They're talking about this other game that doesn't exist.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Chad, you are a brave man.
Oh, yeah.
To finish this thought a little bit and explain why Chad is brave. Because that game died, we are now in the process of picking a new game.
Mm-hmm.
And we did pick a new game. And as we did, I kind of tried to chronicle what our group was going through and think about in the past what it's been like to pick a new game and come up with some ideas and pitfalls that people can consider when their group is in the position of needing to pick a new game. But for this game, we are going to be using the 3.5 SRD. And for anyone, it's basically all the open source D&D 3.5 stuff. If you're looking to run a game on the cheap, it's the best way to do it. Go to it's free. D20srd.org. They have pretty much the complete rules for D&D 3.0 and 3.5. I think they're missing some character creation stuff, but the vast majority of the material is there. And when I run a D&D game, the first law on the table is no splat books. And Dave, straight out of the gate, was pulling a character class from a splat book.
I told everybody when we started, it's like, you can play anything you want. I don't want to see two things. I don't care for psionics. I don't even have any experience with them, right? Psionics could be the greatest thing that D&D has ever seen, but I think that...
Just doesn't feel right.
It's
swords and sorcery.
It's sci-fi, but you can change the trappings of it and call it magic, and that was even brought up. But I've just heard too many things. It's unbalanced, it's overbalanced, too powerful, it's not powerful enough. I just didn't want to deal with it. And there's plenty of other stuff out there anyway. And I said, no monks. And it's for a feel thing. I know that you have a lot of problem with monk. They're too powerful. They very well may be. But my problem with it is I don't want to see a Middle Eastern monk in my 13th century European fantasy.
Well, and thinking back on the campaign I had that forever embittered me to monks, because I've kind of had this debate in greater detail with some people on the side, you know, on the forums or whatever, about why I think the monk is too powerful. And in thinking back, I think part of the reason is not per se that the player handbook monk is radically out of balance, but there was a splat book called something like Sword and Fist, or I'm butchering the name, but it's something to that effect. It was two nouns, if it X and Y. And it was a D&D 3.0 or 3.5 splat book for all the warrior classes, including the monk. And I made the mistake of letting my player take some feats from that book. And every other player at the table is like, why do we bother showing up? But that's, I don't know. All right, so getting back.
You know, Dan, I think you're glossing over something. It needs to sink in. Chad is running a D&D 3.5 game.
I've ran 3.0 before.
Running a D&D game.
You have to break the task of GMing down into two discrete tasks. There is the storyteller task, and then there is the rules referee task. You know, there's a storyteller who sets the scene and declares what the NPCs are doing and creates the plot and blah, blah, blah. And then there is the role of the GM to stat out the enemies, set difficulty levels, know what dice to roll. And you have to understand that when Chad runs D&D, there are two, maybe three game masters at the table. Chad is going to be running the world. Dave and I will be taking turns running the game.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I said, you don't have to worry about it because that's what we've got Dave there for.
And when Chad needs to make a roll of his own, and that has to be based on some statistic we should not be privy to, it won't matter because he's just going to grab any die at random, roll it, and it's just going to roll high, lower, in the middle. And
dice? You need dice?
And yeah, he's got an app for that.
I have three apps for that.
We will be playing D&D, but just to be clear, Chad is running a fantasy game. Dave and I are running D&D. So
I found out why I don't like D&D last night. Okay. Before, you know, I would just, D&D is this, D&D is that, but I don't think I've ever really come out, and seriously, that's not a joke, I hate riffs sort of joke. I don't think I've ever come out and said, I dislike D&D. I said that I've always said it doesn't fit in certain ways, it doesn't do this in certain ways, it's more tactical, it's blah, 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 I don't like generic systems. When we came up with characters and a group concept and group template for D&D for this Sunday game, I found out that I don't like it.
Okay.
I don't like D&D because it's not a generic system. It is a very specifically defined system that gives a very specific certain kind of feel. I wanted the world to have this. I wanted to have this sort of ritual magic and not a mechanical ritual magic. Like, there's ritual magic in D&D. You know, it's so many turns and so many regions and you do this. And
you wanted something
that
more abstracted.
Yeah. Yes. And D&D did not have that. It had the Vancian system and then it had sorcerers. And I didn't want to have Vancian spells in the game. I wanted to do something different. Everyone decided they wanted to do D&D, and that's fine. I had to take that aspect out of the game. Then there was some other aspect where it's just like, well, I don't want this kind of religion. I don't want this, but I want this. Well, D&D has this, and you can change it. You can change it. Again, we're not saying Gary Gygax is going to come to your house and break your kneecaps if you don't do it, especially now. But it's like, if you change it so much to get what I wanted out of it, we're no longer playing D&D.
Yeah, and in this case, it was something I specifically had asked for because I want the D&D experience. Yeah. I've never had it. I've never played a D&D campaign before. So I go in asking for this experience. And yeah, it's limiting some of the things that you're able to choose and what you're going to do. But
that's not a deal breaker.
It's
for
the
me.
Experience I'm looking
it.
For yeah. because I've never had it.
I guess I see where you're coming from. I personally do like D&D. I enjoy D&D. I have no problem with the rules. While, like everybody, I have an edition I prefer to the others, which I'm not getting into. But I like D&D as a whole, and there are several of the settings within D&D. Once again, I have my favorites, but there are several settings I like. There are several more that I'm at least willing to play in.
Well,
but I absolutely see what you're saying, that coming into D&D, it's not a generic system. I mean, you can house rule and modify or expansion.
But then you're
anything,
not playing D&D anymore.
But then you can say about any game, you give me enough time and I'll turn any game into any other game just by house ruling the crap out of it. But out of the box, off the shelf, D&D is a particular thing. And my beef with the whole D20 thing, back when that was really in its full storm a couple years ago, was not that I hated the D20 system.
Mm-hmm.
I hated having
fine.
The D20 system three meals a day every day of the week.
Yeah,
it became the
Savage Worlds became that for us too.
Yeah, within our group at least. Yeah, everything was Savage Worlds.
Everything was Savage Worlds. Every conversation that we had was Savage Worlds. Everything we talked about in the podcast was Savage Worlds. Every time we go to the forums, it's like, well, I want to run a game. Well, what should I run? 25 posts of how you're going to convert it to Savage Worlds, and it's like,
and I like Savage Worlds.
Savage Worlds is a great system. I love it. But
if you don't have the
God,
if you don't have the $9.99 Explorers Edition Savage Worlds, go get it. It's a great edition of gaming library. But holy crap, do you really want it for every game you play for the rest of your life?
You know, I thought of another, my big complaint with D&D when we were making the system last night, is I said that I wanted to do sort of a medium to kind of a medium high fantasy level. As soon as we went over to D&D and as soon as people started making characters, I'm like, we're not doing medium anymore. We are going high fantasy with this because power is relative based on what you're throwing at them. So I don't want to say the characters are too powerful, and it's also dependent on levels, but what the characters can do. Every single character class is in some way magical. Every single character class can do something either paranormal or preternatural, and can do it with a lot of flash and a lot of zing, and it's really very D&D.
Yeah, with the right feats, a warrior can do far more in one round than a human being should be able to do in that many seconds.
Yeah, and rogues can do things that human beings can't do, and that's fine. I'm not complaining about that, but I had to alter my game, and I came to the realization that D&D is not a generic system. It's not a generic system at all.
No, it's not. I think it's the ubiquitous system. It's a prevalent system, but I will agree with you.
It's a famous and popular system, and even it's a pretty good system,
I think. I agree. I think it's a solid, refined system. All right, but let's get back to
Hating on role-playing games.
Well, you know, there's a topic we kind of strayed into, and this is probably how I'll mark the show notes, of we kind of edged into something we've edged around before, which is the implied setting built into a role-playing game system, which I believe D&D has, just like everything does. Yeah. Everything has an implied setting that the rules inevitably create, going way back to the design series where we talked about just by charting out how the dice mechanics work, whether they create bell curves or flat lines and all stuff, which I
having the Vancian system in D&D defines how magic operates in your world to a certain extent. Now you can change the trappings of that, but there's still a certain underlying, and then there's certain house rules, and there's certain changing it to get what you want.
Right. So, all right, but let's get back to the topic we started on, which is the process that we went through and have gone through in the past to pick a new game.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say your gaming group, just like our gaming group, is in a situation where your previous game just died for whatever reason. It doesn't matter. Or maybe this is a brand new group and you're getting together for the very first time and you have to pick what it is that you're going to play each Wednesday night when you get together. I think an easy place to start is just by getting the ideas on the table. What do people want to play? What does somebody feel interested in running? Because obviously, if nobody's interested in running
everyone wants to play Shadowrun, but nobody wants to run Shadowrun.
You simply cannot play Shadowrun. Yeah. But, you know, do a brainstorming session, get the ideas out there, shoot nothing down, debate nothing, just get the ideas on the table. And a side note I would give during this brainstorming session is be open to new ideas. Okay, I realize it's not always fair to say you can't dislike something until you've tried it. I've never done heroin, but I can tell you I don't want to get on heroin.
Yeah.
I've never been hit by a Mack truck, but I can tell you I don't want to be hit by a Mack truck.
You're just closed-minded.
I realize this is kind of a weird analogy, because obviously trying out a role-playing game is not like getting hit by a Mack truck.
Well, and I also have to caution that you want to be open-minded, but you don't want to be so open-minded your brain falls out. I mean, if you know you don't like something, then you don't like it.
But the counterpoint I would give, while conceding in all fairness that point, is that I think people ought to be a little more open-minded than oftentimes we are predisposed to be. That if somebody puts an idea on the table and feels strongly about it, and you've never tried it, I'm not saying, once again, you have to have tried it to have an opinion on it. But do try to be at least a little open to new ideas. You know what? You just might find you enjoyed it by going a little bit outside of your curmudgeon-y box.
And I agree with that. I just have to take the opposite tack.
Well, you can fall off either side of that road. So, absolutely.
Where you can. I think that the group also has to look at, like, we have a person in our group, Dave, who's listening to this right now. And Dave prefers fantasy, doesn't care for sci-fi. And Dave does give on the sci-fi front. That's why we played Epoch of Rhysos, is because he gave on that front. He's like, okay, we've been playing fantasy. That's cool. Let's try this. And as a group, you have to identify that. You have to say, okay, when we're putting this stuff on the table, we have to say, well, you know, maybe the past couple games we've done were sci-fi. This guy doesn't like sci-fi. And not that he doesn't like it, but he prefers fantasy. Maybe we should throw some fantasy on the table too. Maybe we should tend towards that before we get into the final voting, the tyranny of democracy, as we call it. And I think that both points are extremely valid. And I think that the truth, as always, lies somewhere in the middle
and somewhere in compromise. On the one hand, the guy who may be against something might need to give. But on the flip side, look, his tastes are just as valid as everyone else's. Like you said, if you've run three sci-fi games in a row, it wouldn't kill the group to run a fantasy game for the sake of the guy whose tastes have not been taken into account as heavily. But once you've got those ideas out there, within my experience, I have tried four different methods for actually picking the game. So if your group is at the point where you have your short list of ideas, you've cut out the ideas that just are not going to work for whatever reason. Nobody owns the books. Nobody wants to run them, whatnot. I found four ways, and here they are. The first is, if your group has only one game master, you take the tact, if the game master's not excited about it, it's not going to work, and you just let the GM decide.
I couldn't agree more. That makes complete and total sense.
Now, obviously, that does not work if your group has multiple game masters, which was the situation we have right now. We have a gaming group that has multiple people who are willing and able to game master good games. I have been in groups...
Oh, thank you.
You're quite welcome. I have been in groups in the past where that was not the case.
You had multiple people who were willing to run really terrible games. Wait, yes. That is our teenage years, but...
Well, I think there even came a point as I got a little older where there were people in my group who were very happy to GM and were still running terrible games. And even though some of the rest of us had kind of moved past that point, I realized that that's a personal taste thing. But I have been in groups where flat out nobody else wanted to GM. I was right. The only guy in the group that was willing to GM. And so in some cases, they would just put it back and say, look, what are you most excited about? Because you as the game master are going to tell the most story with the most enthusiasm, the most colorful world, keep it going the longest. Because if you've got four players, one of them can have an off week. Mm-hmm. The GM is all by himself. If he has an off week and it's not a sandbox, purely player-driven game, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And so that's method number one.
You know, and I would say in a group like that, if you've got someone in that group that wants to play a genre that is not what the GM keeps wanting to play, that's that person's opportunity to stand up and actually run a game.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to leave someone's interest out, but at that point, if only one person's willing to run it, someone else needs to step up and contribute.
Yeah, I think the reason I never fought it was twofold. One, I prefer GMing to playing. While I'm willing to play and I do my best to be a cooperative and a good player, I prefer GMing to playing. And
you're a hard-ass power gamer.
Oh, big time, yeah. Big time. Yeah,
we call you... Well, look at what you're playing in our current game. Hey, you are a min-maxed fighter.
That was your idea. My original character... I threw out two character concepts. One was much more subtle. The other was over-the-top min-maxed.
Okay. Tell us about your
character. All right, so we're playing this D&D game, as we mentioned. It's a setting that Chad is creating. And
actually, it's a setting everyone is creating.
Right, okay. You kicked it off. You started the ball rolling, and we have some hand in modifying it or negotiating it.
So far, I've given everybody who's playing a piece of the world based on their character, like where their character comes from, and I want each player to develop that aspect of the world along with their character.
Right. But the basic concept of our group template is that we are a group of traveling performers. And this got kicked off because what Wayne is really excited to try playing in a fantasy game is he has this character concept in mind of a guy who's a performer. Being D&D, it will probably be a bard. Wonderful character class.
He was inspired actually while watching Gamers Darkness Rising. Watching the bard in that game and then talking about bards a couple weeks before I saw the movie, that really cemented the idea of, I'd like to play that guy that walks into town and has knowledge and snaps his fingers and gets the barmaid.
But at the same time, because of that, has a history.
Yeah.
When he walks into town, Chad's going to roll a die, and that's how many husbands, fathers, and boyfriends are looking to kill him because of the things that he has done.
Or maybe it's just the angry barmaid herself that's looking to slap me.
Yeah.
Because how many kids are there that are yours?
And that's how this whole thing started. Was I was telling Chad about that idea. It's like, at some point, I want to get to a game where I can play this character. So, and that's what I want to do. I want to roll into town and roll the dice and see what happens.
I came up with two character concepts. One was I was going to attempt something that, to the best of my recollection, I have never, in all my years of gaming, ever done even once, which was play a female player character, a female PC. I mean, I've obviously played female NPCs, so I've never played a female PC before. And I was going to play someone who is a knight from a holy order who, for some reason, we hadn't worked into the group template, but was fused into this party and was chaste and honorable and all these things and despised Wayne's character. Yeah. I mean, not to the point of killing him, but she was utterly disgusted with everything he was doing. My other concept was, since we're a traveling show, we had developed that these kingdoms had been at war with these invading ogres, not orcs, but full-blown 10-foot, 12-foot tall ogres. And my character had sort of switched sides, realizing the war was going to be lost by his side. He switched sides and is now working with the show of basically put a silver piece in the pot and see if you can make it 30 seconds in the ring with the ogre.
Yeah.
You know, Dan, I didn't say this Sunday, but I was really glad you went the ogre route, because I thought it would have been a huge risk to have one character in the party that automatically started the game hating another. I was worried about that for the campaign.
The only reason I wasn't worried about it is because I've been doing this long enough. I know what I'm doing. I would know how to, especially probably as one of the people in the group who is most anti-party conflict. I don't think it ever would have crossed any problematic lines. So
I was just worried about it would have been the Holy Sister from the Order of Nag Wayne's character.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Are you hitting on that girl? She has rights.
All right. So possibility number one is just the GM flat out decides. Possibility number two is single item voting. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets to pick one game. To avoid any social pressures, they write it down on a piece of paper or send it an email to someone that everyone says is relatively neutral, and you come up with what the answer is. And I say that social pressure thing because sometimes people may feel compelled to pick a certain game because they don't want to make somebody else mad because there's some politics involved
in it. I'll tell you, social pressure. We're a group of five, and it broke down to 2-2 with me being the deciding factor. And I'm picking between a game Dan wants to run and a game Chad wants to run. That is social pressure.
Well, and on top of that, both sides, I think, we were willing to give, and I'll come back to the being willing to give, both sides were very passionate about their own games. Not against each other's games. But
I would have been happy to play in any of your games.
I wanted
to play in both games. That's the problem.
And so Wayne got to be the bad guy. But so sometimes writing it down on a piece of paper takes away some of that because nobody but the guy tabulating it knows how everyone voted. So you just do a single item vote. Now, the only place this breaks down is if you have a large number of ideas because of the fact that you can end up with, we got five people and five games got one vote, or we have four people and two games got two votes. And so this brings up the third thing, which is the one that I have used the most in my gaming career, though I think
Russian roulette.
Yes, that is correct. The guy who dies does not get to vote.
No, he doesn't.
Whatever he said was wrong, it's vetoed. If there's a majority, you play that. No, it's ranked voting, which is where what you do is you whittle the game down or the game list down to a short list. And let's say you have six games on the table or six campaigns on the table. You somehow, through conversation about levels of interest and such, whittle that down to a list of maybe three, and everybody ranks those in order. You total up the points, and whichever game has the most points is the one that wins. And what that helps you do is there may be two games where you're okay with either. You just don't want this third one. So it gives you a chance to vote both for and against certain games in a way of speaking, so that even if your first idea isn't picked, there's a better chance your second idea will be picked.
So have you ever thought about taking this from a different perspective, though, Dan? Starting off with each player around the table telling what they want out of the game.
I'm getting to that.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. I'm getting to that. But you raise a good point, though, in that I have that as the step to take after the game's selected. You may be right in saying that this is probably conversation best done before the game. But let's come back to that in just 1 second. Let me get this fourth idea out. So one is the GM decides. Two is single item voting. Three is ranked voting. The fourth one is you do either of the voting methods, but taking a little bit from idea number one, because the GM has to carry the majority of the game, if you have a GM in mind, once again, big if here, that GM's vote counts double. So if you're doing single item voting or ranked voting, however the game master votes, presuming there's a pre-selected game master, that person's vote has additional weight. So they cannot veto or overwhelm the gestalt of the gaming table, but if it's close, their preference tips the scales as opposed to allowing a tie. Or if there is a tie, it falls back to the GM to break the tie. Now, Wayne, let's get to your point, which is I had here in my notes that after you've picked the game, you ought to go through a period of setting expectations for the game, of trying to figure out what people want out of the game in terms of the length of the campaign, the depth, the genre, you know, comedy versus seriousness. How detailed are characters going to be? How long do we want the campaign to run? What kinds of themes do we want explored? Where do we want our characters to go? But you raise a very valid point that may be a discussion best held early. The only problem I think you could get into there is you may get so busy debating the trees, you never deal with the forest. You've got five campaigns on the table to vote between. You've got a night set aside to pick out the new game and maybe make characters. And 2 hours in, you're still bickering out the details of a campaign you haven't even picked yet.
Well, and that's why when I was saying that, I was thinking specifically, what do you want out of the game? Not aspects of, I want to be this class or I want to do this exactly in the game, but some of the big basics. Yeah, you know, what genre do you want would be a good one to ask, but this is the character depth I want out of the game. I want to experience a charismatic character because I've never done it. And some of those questions, once they're put together and you kind of get a picture of what everyone wants, maybe it would be easier then for the GM to say, okay, I have a game I'd like to run now based on what you've all just said. Or, I was going to run this game, but now that I've heard all this, I don't want to even throw it on the table because it's not what I had in mind.
Those are all really great points. And I think it's also a great way of building compromise, because you may get someone who says, look, I'm against a particular game because of this, or I'm for a particular game because I really want to explore this. But someone else at the table may be look at, say, wait a minute, here's how we could resolve that. You know, if your only problem with this game is this one aspect, here's a way we can work around it. Or if you're really latched on to, let's take our current game, D&D, because you want to play the Flandering Bard, well, instead of the Flandering Bard, we can play Star Trek and you can be the Flandering Captain Kirk. There are ways you can adapt these ideas, even in the discussion phase, that, number one, as you said, may help make clear even without a vote. I mean, you may, through discussion, all simply come to the sudden same epiphany moment that, oh my gosh, this is the game we ought to be playing because this is where it all comes together. But even if that doesn't work, then during the voting process, it may help change some votes or put some viability into ideas that people were previously against.
So, Pat, none of us here have been involved in a campaign that has gone on years and years and years. These really long, extended campaigns.
No, you and I are involved in one.
What?
There was we had a BattleTech campaign, the Nova Hawks, that went on.
No, well, nothing like what does.
Okay, well, Pat,
I will cut the difference. I will agree with you simply because you added and years and years and years to the length, to the end of your first years. So, but go on.
Okay, Pat, these old timers have been in a game. I've never been in a game like that. So Chad's question, whatever it is, can count for me.
So, well, my question is, what's the genesis of that? How do you guys pick a game that you'll play for ever and ever and ever?
Well, and
is that better than years and years and years forever?
Forever, ever, ever. I'm glad you touched on that because I've been sitting here listening to this discussion, and
I know.
Well, yeah. what strikes me is that this is actually almost as new to me as it is to Wayne, because this role playing group is so different than all the other role playing groups that I've played in the past, because I played in very long standing campaigns.
Yes.
Well, no, it's just, and I kind of look at it as like this group, for whatever reason, I think it's just they have like a short attention span.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we play these very short run games. And I think that's part of it. It's like I think part of what kills our games is our attention spans are that of a gnat. It seems to me.
I think
some
more
point,
of attention spans, we set our expectations too high.
I think it's all kinds of things. But I think I also think it's that this group, this role-playing group, is in that firm mindset of we're going to play a game for a short while and then we're going to move on to another one. That makes it even easier for a game to die because we're just move on to the next one.
Well, you've also got the personality trait Chad and I talked about in the first topic. We like to try new things. So the longer we play in something, it may be a short attention span. Well, it may just be, I want to do something new. I want to try something new
now. And see, that is something that we had in my other groups. I played other games as well, but we always went back to the other one. So, and I didn't, I haven't answered your question yet. I'm sort of getting around to it.
Please.
I'm on my soapbox now.
Yes, I love it when you stump.
To answer your question before I go on anything else, because I don't want to forget it. In both of those instances, like when I first started role playing up, we played Dragonlance. That was the first thing. And that one went on for a while. Then we sort of got out that, and then oddly enough, which you should expect it from this group by now, we started playing the homebrew of my original GM, and it was his, you know, the world that he created. So, and we started playing that, and we just kept going, and that group went from a couple people, then we added some more people, and then it evolved over time. Some people left, some new people came in, and you know, there were very few, you know, just a couple of us that were really original players, and then all these other new players, but we stayed with that same world, like, you know, and that also happened with another group, the other group that I was in, same thing. It was a homebrew campaign. It was a world that he created, started playing it, exact same thing. New players come along, they come and go, and this, that, and the other. But what we do is we would play it for a while. Maybe we'd get burnt out on it. And I don't want to play this anymore.
Yeah.
We'd set it aside for a while. We'd play other things. We'd play Deadlands. We'd play Call of Cthulhu. We'd, you know, whatever else. But then we'd come back to it again. Mm-hmm. And that's something that this group, in my experience, has never done.
Well, that's
I think you guys maybe have done it. You know, Chad and Dan. But our current group, have not done that. It's very foreign to me. So I've sat here this whole episode sitting here going, gosh, I can't contribute on this because this is just not what I've ever done before. This is so new to me.
In our group, the question is, is the game over when we're done with it or when the game is finished? And what I mean by that, I'll use the analogy of a cigar. People ask me or ask in general, when is a cigar over? You spend all this money for it and it's so long, and do I smoke it down all the way to the nub to where it starts tasting nasty and the smoke is hot?
Or worse than that, I watched somebody once stick a toothpick in because they couldn't put their fingers on it. Because I paid $8 for this cigar, I'm going to get every last
What is the cigar equivalent of a roach?
Apparently a toothpick.
toothpick, pretty much. You stick a toothpick right there.
Okay, I got you.
Like a hobo on
right, but
Bugs
the toothpick
Bunny.
Caught on fire in this case.
Boys, are you done with
that?
Or are you done with the cigar? Like, you smoke it until your enjoyment is over. And that could be 2 seconds into it. It could be when it reaches the band. It could be whatever it is for you. And I view role-playing games with the same question. Is a role-playing game over when it's done? When it has reached its final plot point, you're at the end of the book and you see the end, the movie credits roll, and all the plot points have been tied up. Maybe there's a to be continued, but it's done. It's over. Or is a role-playing game over when the players are finished with their enjoyment? Not that they're hating it, but we're just done with it. And I've been in groups, my last group before this one, the role-playing game was done when either it got killed, usually by Christmas and vacations, or it was done when it was over, when we said the end, when we rolled the final credits, and we have finished the campaign. With this group, it's done when we are finished with it. Well, when our enjoyment has run out, we're ready for something else.
I personally like longer lasting campaigns.
Well, I don't think it necessarily has to do with length.
Well, okay, but you were asking Pat what sets up these campaigns that do last for years. And that is the sort of thing I want. I just think our predisposition, some of it's genre disagreement. It's very hard to find a game we all like. Some of it's the new shiny effect. Some of it is, as I said, I think we have too high of expectations. We want every game, and by game, I don't mean campaign, I mean every sitting, to be so explosive that if we have a slow one, we start to look at the shinies.
That's totally unrealistic in every campaign.
Absolutely. And in my case, in both of my big examples from the past, it's been that, okay, this gaming group started and this is the game we're playing. Like I said, eventually we got into these homebrewed worlds, and that's this is the game we're playing in this gaming group. This is what this gaming group
and
does.
We're going to be here, so we
does
gotta
it sound
make it
good
work.
We like this, so we're playing it, and we loved it. I mean, it wasn't it wasn't like, oh god, this sucks, where this is the only thing we do. No, we enjoyed it, and so, you know, you kept playing it, and we never had that thought of, I mean, what you just described, Chad, never came across. It just was never in the minds of, well, when will this end? That's not, it's like the never ending campaign. See, that's kind of what we look at. Like, we don't have an ending point. We don't have that as in mind. I mean, if it died, which technically speaking, the one, my original one, you could call it dead because we haven't played it in a long time. And I don't know that we will ever go back to it because we've grown up and grown apart.
Sure.
You know,
we don't live
in the same cities anymore. Yeah. So it's hard to get people back together.
To me, that's like a soap opera. And I don't mean that as a pejorative.
I agree.
A soap opera goes on and on and on, and it changes as it goes.
Yes.
But it keeps going on and on and on, and maybe focus on different characters in and out. Again, I'm not saying that to down the style.
I like that. That's a very good explanation of it. And I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's a perfect example.
I'll describe it as a comic book because that never ends as well.
Well, that's true.
I don't want anything that I'm associated with to be compared to a soap opera.
I don't know. Soap operas can be good.
A simpler way of looking at it is it's purely character driven. A plot line may end, but unless they die, the characters don't end.
Yeah, you pick up another one.
They save the maiden. The world is all sunshine and glitter, but their lives go on.
And personally, I don't care for that. I don't think, I'm not going to say it's wrong. You're not having fun. You're doing it wrong. What I'm saying is I have always liked, in my books, in TV series and movies, anything with a story, I want a beginning, a middle, and an end. I think the best way to write a book series is to do a trilogy. I think that movies should stop at trilogies. I want a beginning, a middle, and an end. I want that in a role-playing game. And it seems like in our group, we do great beginnings, and our middles are what a middle should be. A little bit of downtime, but a lot of stuff going on, and then we never get to that end. And I want to answer something that you keep bringing up, Dan. It's about expectations and how we both agree that the expectations are too high. We want a firecracker game every single game. That cannot happen. In my last group, it was all new people. They had never played a role-playing game before, and they didn't know what to expect. And so we would talk about it, and they would ask me, what are the expectations for a game? This game really sucked. We were having such a good time the past two sessions, but this one really sucked. What were we doing wrong? And I would have to explain to them, no one did anything wrong. When you play a role-playing game, week after week, or month after month, or whatever your schedule is, you will have down games. Maybe games that just aren't firecracker, they aren't explosive, they don't snap, and they don't pop. Maybe even a lot of stuff goes on, but they're just not firecracker.
Mm-hmm.
In my estimation and in my experience, you will have more down games than you will have up games. But the up games are the ones you remember, and they make up for the down games. The reason you play is for the up games. And sitting through two down games in a row to get to an up game is 100% worth it, and you don't care that they were down.
The one thing I would throw that, I would say you remember the really good and the really bad. Mm-hmm. It's the middle of the road. The down games aren't the really bad ones. Those are just
I don't want to get too sidetracked talking about campaign length, because there may be a show unto itself in that, mm-hmm. about talking about the virtues.
I know Pat has a lot to say about length.
I do.
Just not a lot of length to say about. I do think, though, that certainly does bear relevance to this discussion in terms of, as we've been talking about, setting the expectations. And in fact, this came up during our discussion this past Sunday when we were trying to pick a new game, is when we put some of these campaigns out. Yeah, I thought it was Dave, but yeah, it was me. Question.
Because as we've discussed,
how long will this game go? Yeah.
We've had a hard time getting to the end of some of these campaigns, and I don't have this whole history of campaigns, so I want to see the ending. I want to see that
I will say on the show right now, because I don't think I actually answered your question, my goal for this game is to have what I want out of a role-playing game. It is going to have a beginning, it's going to have a middle, and it's going to have an end. And I want to have those three things in there, and I want to do it to where we get to that beginning and that middle and that end.
To wrap this up, I want to talk about two final points related to picking a new game. The first of which is, once you have selected a new game, now that you are committed to it, everybody's hopefully on the same page, or is at least compromised to be on the same page, is making sure this game is set up for success. And there's probably an entire show to mine out of this. So I'm just going to talk about this at the real high level.
Yeah, but write that one down. Setting up a game for success.
But be sure to at least do the due diligence of putting together a group template, thinking about why your last game failed, and taking steps, let your gaming group evolve and grow, taking steps to avoid having that happen again, making sure you've got characters that are interconnected and that everybody likes. You've discussed with the GM any possible reservations you have, but make sure that campaign's set up for success. And the second topic, and this one I don't think we can get a show out of because it's a simple idea, even though everybody struggles with it, is be a big boy or a big girl. Part of gaming, unless you're lone wolfing, is there's got to be compromise. Yeah. When you bring three people, four people, five people to a gaming table, the fact is, they're all going to have their own ideas. They're all going to have their own takes. You can't play the game you want every time. And part of what you've got to do to make this work, and this is just a social thing, is have an amount of maturity about it. Be prepared to compromise. That doesn't mean selling yourself out every time.
Well, and
be prepared to compromise, and be prepared that if there are three campaigns on the table and there is one you just got to play and it's not picked, don't be a douchebag and sabotage the game, mm-hmm. or throw a tamper tantrum. Let me give an example. Once again, straight from this Sunday, when we came together, there was a couple campaigns on the table. We talked about resurrecting our previous Skies of Glass campaign, but continuing the plot from the perspective of different characters. Mm-hmm. We talked about the same thing with the Epoch Rhysos game. But the two games that really seemed to be the most emotion towards was, Chad was really eager to run his fantasy game, mm-hmm. and I was really eager to run a Star Trek game. Now, obviously, well, both may happen eventually. Both aren't going to happen right now. And at some point, Wayne's going to have to cast that tie-breaking vote, which is fun making him be the bad guy. But, you know, part of that is I had to set myself with that attitude. And I believe that Chad did as well, mm-hmm. that if my idea loses...
No, my idea was, if my idea wins, I'm going to sabotage my game.
But, you know, I've played with people who don't sabotage their own games, but have done that, where they lose the vote, and so they just get real passive aggressive and screw up the game.
Or at best, they just phone it in.
Yeah, for heaven's sake, don't do that.
Yeah.
Give it your all. Try it. Who knows? You just might enjoy it. And if nothing else, it's just part of being a grown-up is compromising and playing along. And so the game I wanted lost the vote. Yeah, we're playing Chad's game, but I'm going to give this my all. I'm going to create a character, put depth into him, put thought into him, do my best to bring an A game and contribute to Chad's world. And when this campaign ends, hopefully at its proper time and does not die a premature death, if I get
with
to run
the death of Pat's character,
if I get to run Star Trek next, then I hope that the people at the table will do the same thing for me or whatever campaign it is we run next.
Can I play an ogre in Star Trek?
Sort of.
we can make it work.
You can be green. It's sad that it even needs mentioning, but it's just, it's human nature, and some people are more mature than others, but everybody is immature in some little way.
Yeah.
And so I think it just bears mentioning that, look, be prepared to deal with the fact that you ought to walk away with something you wanted, but you may not walk away with everything you wanted. If you're having nothing you want, it's time to take a break, find another group, or have a sit down with the folks at the table about why they're not compromising. But if you don't get everything you want, that's life. Welcome to it.
Even if you win the vote, you may not get everything you want. The game Chad's running, for example, isn't exactly what he wanted. It's not the system he originally wanted. There are all these little tweaks here and there.
I made
all for compromise.
I made a bunch of compromises, but in the end, I think I won out because the compromises that I gave, I gave with demands, and those demands were that each player writes a part of the world, not the campaign, but the world. And each player defines a part of their world. And to me, that's awesome. Well, obviously, it's less work for me. But more than that, hopefully, if it works out, it's a buy-in for each player.
You're absolutely right. But I'm going to disagree with your choice of words. You cannot win out. The group wins out or loses out. Role-playing games are only won by the entire group having a fun time and being glad they spent 2, 4, 6, 8, whatever hours together playing this game. I don't know that I'd say you won so much as if we put our all into this and we as a collective have a great campaign, we have all won by submitting ourselves to this social process. And that is the attitude when you're picking a new game you have to begin with. Is the end point here is not to get everything you want. It's to create a great experience for you and all of your friends. And that attitude will make this process a whole lot easier than digging ditches and fighting this partisan war to get a particular system or particular little stupid thing.
Yep. And I've learned a lesson out of all of this. My lesson is next time, even if I'm not 100% sure, even if both games sound good,
vote first.
I'm throwing my vote in first because I'm not going to be the tiebreaker ever again.
I told you that sitting in the restaurant. I have no pity for you, sir. Yep. I told you that sitting in the restaurant. You should vote fast because otherwise you're going to be the bad guy and you didn't do it.
I got my vote in quick. Experience.
That's right. Pat can't last long on anything.
Right. Unfortunately, Pat backed the wrong horse. So.
All right. I guess that's where we'll leave this.
And I will remember this as I run the game. Yeah.
It won't be next episode, but one of these episodes, I'd love to come back to the topic of setting your game up for success. I got a lot of thoughts about that. But in the meantime, you guys have great games, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.